Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com/CBSSports and use the offer code FUN, F-U-N. Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Special guest today, Summer Dreams is a documentary airing on CBS March 15th at 8 p.m. Got co-executive producer of Summer Dreams, John Weinbach. How's it going?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me. Excited to be on CBS.
I just watched the Summer Dreams this morning. This is not just me being a company man. Like, this is, it's really phenomenal there. We'll get into like the little aspects of it here and there, but especially there's player Dwayne Davis, just the way his story was presented and really every story in there. Like, it's a phenomenal piece of work.
Well, thank you. First off, never gets old hearing those kind of phrases, but that really is, much appreciated. Davis, really all of the characters that we ended up spotlighting, we chose for, some combination of story, stakes, personality, all the things that go into good storytelling you hope you get from the characters. But with Dwayne, I have to say, sometimes you get a little lucky, and I have to give a lot of credit to one of our producers at Mandalay Sports Media, Mason Gordon, who had identified Dwayne through some basketball contacts. I mean, he was a pretty anonymous recruit, anonymous player. I had a great senior year at Southern Miss, but was hardly on anyone's radar. But Mason had sort of gotten wind that he was a great personality and had a great story. And again, sometimes when you're doing, it's like when you do reporting or you do, documentary filmmaking, you hope you're there, you hope you're prepared, and you hope sometimes you have to get lucky. And that sort of happened with Dwayne Davis, in terms of as we spent more time with him and unpeeled the layers of, his story, it just kept getting better and more real. And you just can't help root for a guy who really is kind of, all the cliches. He came broken home, no single parent family, really no stable influence there, and managed to make a life for himself in pro basketball.
I'm admittedly, and anyone who listens to me or follows me on Twitter knows that I'm a huge basketball nerd. I mean, this is my life, and I had honestly never heard of him. I was at Summer League. I watched his games. I still he never registered with me, and watching his story, and then, I'm not going to give too much away, but I guess you could go look up box scores if you want, but he finally gets into a game in Summer League for the Warriors, and he gets the ball, and he takes his first shot, and, I was seriously on the edge of my seat going, just please go in, please go in. There was actual drama with events that have already happened, and just his story. You follow Shane Larkin of the Dallas Mavericks, Lauren Holtkamp, who's a referee prospect for the NBA, Romero Osby, who is playing overseas right now, Joel Abelson, who was the Sioux Falls coach when you first started this process of interviewing him, I'm assuming, and now is the coach for the Reno Bighorns, Michael Carter-Williams, who's everyone knows is probably, I mean, he's at least in the running for Rookie of the Year, if not the winner, and then Dwayne Davis. What's the scouting process of finding, because you really do get a great mixture of different stories and different levels of guys trying to make the NBA and a female referee.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, we had a very experienced production team, and, we're all, you're a hoop guy. I consider myself a one percenter of basketball geekery, and has spent a lot of time around the game. And Mike Tolan, who was executive producer of the show, and my boss, was one of the consulting producers for the entire 30 for 30 series on ESPN. That's how he and I got to know each other. Deeply experienced in storytelling, in sports storytelling, Varsity Blues, Coach Carter. He was the filmmaker for, he was the Steve Sable of the old USFL and made a 30 for 30 on that. And our director, Ted Skillman, other co-executive producer, Jonathan Chin, award-winning, very experienced, unscripted guys, and all big basketball fans. And so we knew, we've all seen Hard Knocks, and we've all seen 24/7, and we've seen the best and the worst of sort of sports documentary filmmaking, and we had high standards. And the other sort of challenge and mandate we had was we were making this for a CBS audience. not necessarily an ESPN audience. And so, you know, you hope that you always strive to tell the best stories. But in this case, we did have, you know, the challenge of these stories had to appeal to my mom. They had to appeal to someone who knew nothing about basketball but just wanted to take a ride into people's journeys. And so that's what guided our process in terms of storytelling. And you know, as you know, the guys with the most at stake and the guys with the best stories are usually not the guys at the top of the first round.
Right.
Because, you know, they come into the NBA and they've made it to a certain extent. They still have to prove it, but there's less for them on the line, certainly in the summer offseason. So we knew kind of going in that we wanted, you know, if we were going to take a guy from the lottery like Michael Carter Williams, there had to be something, you know, beyond the playing stakes. And for him, it's this incredibly unique relationship he has with his mom,
right?
Mandy Carter Williams. And so, and one of the things that we've talked about, sort of, you know, in the press and even amongst ourselves, was the really strong female characters. And that wasn't just doing it to, you know, hope that female viewers would watch. It really is the true world of sports and you know, any profession, but you know, that these big guys are surrounded by very, very important women in their lives. So whether that's Shane Larkin and his mom, Michael Carter Williams and his mom, Romero Osby and his wife, you know, these are a side of the players that you just don't get to see. And even if you're covering the game as a reporter, as a broadcaster, you don't necessarily see. So that was really gratifying for us that we were able to identify, you know, what we thought were some really compelling characters who, again, appealed to an audience that, you know, didn't have to be hardcore basketball fans.
With Michael Carter Williams' story in there, was it by design that his mother is really kind of the forefront of that story? Really, I mean, was that a natural progression, or did you kind of know that going in? I mean, how does that storyline develop with how you present it?
Well, what happened was, there were a couple of, you know, interesting factors. You know, there are different reasons why, you know, some a little luck, some a little timing, some just, hey, happened to be that our executive at CBS, Chris Costello, is a huge Syracuse fan.
Yeah.
So we were watching Syracuse, and I liked Michael Carter Williams. I liked the way he played. And if you remember, he had this huge tournament.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, his it was a story during the tournament. His house burned down. And then Evan Rosenfeld, another one of our producers, and Evan was the one who actually identified Shane. I mean, we sort of knew who the interesting characters might be, and then we sort of started choosing. And you know, whenever you do a project like this, you have to sort of shoot more than you end up, you know, featuring the film. So we were going after somewhere between 10 and 12 characters at any one point. And so with Michael Carter Williams, I think it was Evan or maybe another producer on our team, Catlin Calloway, who found Mandy's blog,
okay,
about her son, and it was like, this is just too good. You have a mom of a lottery pick. Their house is burned down. She's not just a former college basketball player. She's his coach and his manager. So, you know, that's a really unique combination. We all hear about stage moms in you know, the performing arts and Hollywood. But you don't necessarily think of it in the sports realm. And one of my favorite scenes from the film is when Mandy meets with some NBA moms. She meets with Richard Hamilton's mom and Gerald Henderson's mom and Hakeem Warwick's mom. And they just go to it on the real life. Like, you have to let go.
Yeah.
And the real kind of stuff that moms talk about. And the pressure of, you know, when you have a son who's been a star and they don't play in the NBA. Now, that didn't end up happening in Michael Carter Williams' case, but, you know, he did not look good in Summer League. You know, I don't think anyone from Summer League would have said, oh, yeah, he's going to be the Rookie of the Year. So it just shows you, you know, that time of the year is like this cauldron of nerves and stakes and just pressure to prove yourself on every level.
With following Shane Larkin so early into the process, I imagine he breaks his ankle in practice, and now you don't have a summer league story with him necessarily. It's more about the relationship with his father a little bit. You touch on kind of the injury process. There's a really interesting scene where he's in the trainer's room with Barry Larkin, who's his father, if anybody remembers the name. It's a 19-year professional baseball player who made the Hall of Fame, won the 95 MVP. I mean, he's got a serious sports figure as a father, and they're kind of talking about, you know, when's the next time you're going to dunk? And he said, after the season, never. Like, Mark Cuban told me he was going to find me. I mean, was that disappointing? I mean, obviously you don't want to see a guy get hurt, but just in terms of gathering stories for this documentary, is that something where on the fly you kind of feel like you have to adjust, or do you just see what unravels from the situation and kind of use that as material? I'm curious with the process of following someone.
In this case, and you know, look, you never want to have anybody get injured, but you know, selfishly, and I hate to say this, but for our story purposes, the injury to Shane, you know, ended up being a really, I don't want to say a great thing, because it was tough for him, but story-wise, it pushed it in a whole new direction.
Right.
Also, that's real.
Yes.
I mean, you know, injuries and confidence and how you're going to come back, that is a huge part of the professional athlete experience. And all we become so inured to, oh, he has, you know, Adrian Peterson had ACL surgery, comes back 9 months, nothing, you know, it's like he never got off the field. And this guy's come back, and they go to Germany, and they have this procedure, and they do this. You know, it can be soul-crushing to injure yourself. And you know, if anybody who's had a knee surgery, there's a period where you're not even sure you're going to be able to walk.
Right.
So to have that setback right at the cusp of his career, you know, was a really interesting, you know, story point for us. And it's a credit to Evan, who went to the University of Miami, and he had worked on the ESPN 30 for 30, and he developed a relationship with Shane very quickly and got the trust of the family that we were, I mean, this was literally the timeline. We were shooting Shane that, I think it was Wednesday and Thursday before Summer League. They were supposed to fly to Vegas on Friday. Evan was in Vegas on Friday, gets a text from Shane or maybe we saw it on Twitter, that he had broken his ankle, and we had a quick huddle, and we're like, we got to get you back on the plane. So he went back to Dallas, and this is a case where, I have a very good relationship with Donnie Nelson of the Mavericks from the film I had done a couple years ago called The Other Dream Team.
Yes.
About the Lithuanian Olympic basketball team. And Sarah Melton at the Mavs has always been incredibly helpful. And this was a case where, you know, having worked with them before and having built up a relationship, and they knew that we were not sort of doing this for salacious purposes, I call, you know, Shane okayed it for us to go to the doctor and the surgery, and we still needed the team to say yes. And so, you know, literally, I went up to Donnie in Vegas at the, I think, the Cox Arena, and said, well, here's the situation. Shane says yes. You know, what do you say? He said, go for it. And so, you know, sometimes, like I said, you try to put yourself in the position to get good stuff. And sometimes you got to get a little lucky. And so on a couple of these cases in the film, we did both. So, you know, I hope that comes across, that we were sort of getting really cool access. And you know, that's what always makes, you know, great material.
In getting access like that, I would imagine you've got so much material, and you've got to shave it down into about an hour and a half, correct? Is there anything that doesn't make the cut that you're disappointed you couldn't fit in, or do you overall just feel like, no, we told the story that evolved and emerged in front of us, and we're happy with that?
Yeah, I know. I think we're ultimately very pleased. I mean, you know, it was a real challenge, because while we had a lot of material, the material didn't span a great amount of time.
Right.
Meaning, you know, it was really, we were only with our main characters for the duration of Summer League, about a week, plus one or two or three pickup days before or after. So a lot of time when you're doing a feature-length doc, especially sort of a verite, you know, follow-style doc, you have a little bit more time, or there's a clearer ticking clock. Like, you know, in 24/7, they're they're leading up to a game, or they're leading up to a fight. And in Hard Knocks, there's a cut every episode because they're leading to the end of training camp.
Right.
In ours, it's a little more amorphous. It's the summer off season. You know, in a dream scenario, we'll get to do this as a series episodically, where we can spread it out over let's say 6 episodes that span from before the draft up until right before training camp. So that you really get a sense of the passage of time, and then you can be a little more surgical in what you shoot. I mean, we were under the gun a little bit because we just didn't have that much time with the guys. So, in terms of material that didn't make it, I was asked this the other day. There's one scene that we had with, and I think there's maybe a snippet of it in the final version, but we had a great scene with Vivek Ranadive, the new owner of the Sacramento Kings, and we were with them in the war room on draft night, and then we were in his suite in Vegas with Pete D'Alessandro, the general manager, and Ben McAdoo when he's signing his first contract. And again, we've become so desensitized to so and so signs a contract, you don't actually think about what is that room like when a guy is signing for millions of dollars, and he's going from a guy making, I don't know, $800 a month in scholarship money to like $80,000 a week.
Right.
And how life-changing that is, and the grin that comes across Ben McLemore's face, and the sigh of relief, and sort of Vivek Ranadive looking him in the eye and saying, you're the face of the new franchise. Whether that works out is a whole separate issue, but it was a great scene, and we had to cut time.
Wanted to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Squarespace, where you can easily create your own professional website or online portfolio. Squarespace is constantly improving their platform, new features, new designs, even better support than before. They have beautiful designs for you to start with, all the style options you could possibly want, creating a unique experience for your website or your online portfolio. Incredibly easy to use. Even if you do run into trouble, they've got you covered. Squarespace has an amazing support team, works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I believe that covers all 365 days a year, and for how many years that you have Squarespace. Over 100 Squarespace employees on the customer care team called the Care Bear Layer. They're in New York, they're local for helping you at any time of the day, no matter what you need. Starts at just $8 a month, includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Doesn't matter how you're going to look at your website, iPhone, iPad, notebook, laptop, desktop, abacus, stone tablets, any kind of tablet you want. It's gonna look great, unique mobile experience for each website, each design that are tailored to make your product look the best it can. You can start a free trial with no credit card required. Start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code FUN. That's FUN. Go to squarespace.com/CBSSports. FUN, you're going to get 10% off. You show your support for the Ion Basketball Podcast. We thank Squarespace for supporting the Ion Basketball Podcast. Squarespace is everything you need to create an exceptional website. Yeah, the whole entire documentary is very humanizing. I mean, you've got guys who are, you've got Michael Carter Williams, who is pretty much a lock to be a lottery pick. You have Shane Larkin, who's pretty much a lock to be a first round pick. And then you have two guys who might not get drafted at all in terms of the players, and the way that it comes across is you can see the hunger in all four of them, but it's a very different hunger. I mean, some of it is a hunger to prove you're your own athlete with Shane Larkin. Some of it is to prove that you are good enough to be picked where you are. And some of it's a hunger of survival. I mean, especially in the case of Dwayne Davis, it's a hunger of survival. And the way it's presented is really incredible. Is that something that was natural?
Well, thank you for pointing that out. I mean, that's I don't know if it was so much natural as it was one of the things that we really wanted to show is, not to toot our own horn, but I think it was very gratifying to be able to put this out there, in the film, which is there are different definitions of success.
Yes.
And, whether you're talking about media, pro basketball, banking, construction, whatever, not everybody can be Michael Jordan. And, for one guy, it's getting out of his dad's shadow. For another guy, it's proving to himself, to his mom, to a city, to a franchise that he's worth a lottery pick. And then, like you said, for Lauren Holtkamp, it's a whole other set of, you know, pressures and you know, what's progress? Progress is just staying in the referee system. And for Dwayne Davis, it's just getting an invite to summer league.
Right.
And then there's Joel Abelson, who has no business, you know, on his face being involved in professional basketball and putting in his 10,000 hours in Tulsa and Sioux Falls and just praying that he gets a gig as an assistant coach on the D League team. You know, so and yet for all of them, that is the dream. The dream is just there's some version of making it. And it doesn't make it any less sweet or any less painful that, you know, one guy's getting paid, you know, $3 million and otherwise getting paid $35,000. So, you know, that was intentional in terms of we wanted to have different kinds of storylines. It can't just be everyone trying to be a star.
Right. Joel Abelson's story is fascinating because, you know, he's a real estate agent that decides he wants to be a basketball coach. And I mean, like I mentioned earlier, like right before you really get going into his story, he's fired. Like he's not the Miami Heat have turned his franchise into, I believe, a hybrid affiliate, and they want their own guy, and he's not that guy. And so now
as Joel would correct you, he was not brought on.
Right. There you go. He's not brought on. Right. He's not brought on. He's this really exuberant, kind of infectious personality who's moving and shaking and meeting with everybody at Summer League, and then he meets with Neil Olshey, the general manager for the Portland Trailblazers, and he's really just brought down to earth. I mean, it was fascinating to me to see that here's a guy who seems to have supreme confidence, and then with basically, I mean, it seems like one question of what did you learn from your experience, he didn't seem to have an answer, and Neil Olshey kind of like tells him, hey, this is what you need to do, and he just looks completely broken or shaken, or I mean, there's a real almost change in his personality that I did not see coming.
You hit it right on the head. I mean, that's I'm glad we were able to get the film to you, because that is verbatim. I was in the room when that meeting took place.
Oh, really?
And I was sort of hiding behind the bar in that massive suite.
I was in Vegas at the same time. I don't believe I had the same type of room that Neil Olshey had.
Yeah. And you know, the kind of ironic part is, of course, like literally minutes before, at least in the movie, and he used to say it all the time. Joel's like, if I could just get in a room with someone, I can excel in an interview. and here he has the chance of a lifetime, you know, meeting with the guy who's, you know, he may be the executive of the year this year, and obviously a veteran guy, Neil Olshey. And the part that to me really just hits to the core is when Neil Olshey says to him, look, you know, you've got guys in the gym in Vegas who are Hall of Famers, coaches of the year, executives of the year, NBA champions, all out of work. Why should anyone hire you?
Right.
And it's just like, whoo, you know, that's real. You know, that's like, you know, bring it or go home. And that is, it's a cutthroat kind of world. And I think Joel was wholly unprepared for that. Also, his confidence at the time was so shaken because he was really, you know, on the cusp of not having a job. And that's, you know, we actually saw as the D-League team did well and, you know, even though, again, the games don't really mean anything, but in Summer League, it's a momentum thing. They did well. He got some positive energy out of Alex,
right,
out of the other players. And so that sort of fed on itself. And you know, I don't think it hurt his chances that the D-League did well. And I think it probably helped him, you know, get a couple more job interviews and ultimately getting one with Reno. And by the way, his team's tied for first place right now.
Yeah, yeah, you know, he's succeeding. It is kind of funny. Like I wonder if his interview with Neil Olshey goes well, but he doesn't end up getting a job out of it. I wonder if he would have had the same seemingly lack of confidence after the Reno interview. Like if everything goes the same way, I do wonder. Like because it seemed like he takes a call from his wife or his fiance or his girlfriend.
Not yet. his girlfriend. Yeah,
yeah, his girlfriend, and it's just like, yeah, you get a feeling it just didn't go that well, or I don't think I'm going to get it. And it was a different person than we saw when he's first introduced into the documentary.
Yeah, no, there's a huge difference of energy from when he's calling himself the best looking Jew in professional basketball to like, I just don't think it went well. So it's a total different energy. I think, and we're talking about a month and a half. That was the difference in time between those, two interviews, a little bit longer than that, actually. But how quickly fortunes can change and confidence, whatever you do is so important. And the littlest things can make it waver or can build it. And, he was about as low as, and I've been in touch with him for now the better part of a year. That post the Olshay interview, he was crushed. I mean, he was really, really crushed. And I said to him, I said, look, I think he really thought he bombed the interview, and he did not do well, but he still had the opportunity to talk again with Neil Olshay, and that's something most people don't have.
Right.
He had met with him. And Neil said, call me. And I said to Joel, I said, you have an opportunity here. There's a door open for you with, one of the best executives in basketball. And you got to take that opportunity. So what if you did bad in the interview? He'll respect you more if you continue and, seek out his advice. No one ever complains when you ask them for advice.
Right.
So, he I think, took that to heart. And, ultimately, I think it was probably a good thing for him because he realized how hard it is.
Lauren Holdkamp was also a fascinating story. She's trying to become the third full-time female NBA referee, and just with the entire process of the way the NBA evaluates and kind of shields the officiating realm of it, did you find any trouble in trying to get access to at least that part of her story? I know Adam Silver has taken over and he's much more openly evaluating the officials, but under David Stern that wasn't so much the case. What was it hard to kind of develop that story in terms of getting enough access to really show what she was going through?
No, we had carte blanche to interview every ref at any time. that's obviously not true. It was at times, listen, it's a sensitive issue.
Yes.
Leagues don't want their officials to be public faces. And yet, at the same time, you can make an argument that the more hidden they are, the more it leads to suspicion, it leads to mistrust. And, I see both sides of it. So, we worked very closely, and I give a ton of credit to Deonca Koros and Paul Hersheimer, at NBA Entertainment. We had to establish some parameters about, who was going to shoot Lauren, but at the end of the day, they allowed us to tell that story, and that's not an easy decision on their part, and we were enormously grateful for it. So, there were obviously always things that, look, if we had our druthers, we'd have had even more access than we had, but, look, you take what you can get, and it ultimately paid dividends because she's a really compelling character, and, you don't see female refs. You don't see female refs who are that attractive, articulate, and just really driven to officiate. It's just a unique character.
It was really cool to see. There are a couple of snippets where a coach asks her, why is it a foul on this end and not a foul on that end? And why did you do this? Why didn't you do that? And the way she explains herself, it's something that definitely you don't see with officials. I mean, we often just see Joey Crawford screaming at somebody and then hitting them with a technical. And here you actually got to see an explanation, like almost a behind the curtain look at officiating. It's just a small aspect of it, but I thought that was a really cool thing to present to a casual NBA fan, which I'm sure there'll be plenty of casual NBA fans tuning in.
Yeah, it was, we actually, like in the editing, we called that the like, you go girl moment. Why is that a call? And she's like, A to B, C to D, and it's like, sit down, coach. that was great. And look, you ask about access. I think, there are many things that the NBA was tremendous, in supporting us with. I don't think anything more than with the audio. because of the way their guys, you know, they have a whole team that's done this for years.
Right.
And these crack producers, like one of their great guys, they call him Steve Michaud, and he was like our, you know, ninja putting mics on coaches and refs and players, and you know, you don't get that without the support of the league, and that was just awesome.
Real quick before I let you go, because I know you're busy. The other Dream Team, you mentioned it. It just a phenomenal documentary about the Lithuanian national team. What was that entire process? I mean, I know it's a lot to go through in a couple of minutes, but just that process of bringing that together. One of the best sports documentaries I've ever seen. It's really good. I went and saw it in a theater. Because I had heard good things about it. I heard a couple of good reviews. It was at an independent theater here in town, and I went and saw it and was just blown away. What was it like? I mean, because that's a much different process of you're in another country telling a different country's story. That had to have been overwhelming at times.
Yeah, I mean, it was you know, an incredible... thank you very much for the kind words, but, you know, it was a 3-year journey, and you know, it has been a longer story. But I did it with my producer partner, and actually the director of the film is guy named Marius Markavicius, who actually was a producer for us in Las Vegas on the Summer Dream Show. He actually shot some of the footage with Dwayne Davis. He's Lithuanian American, and you know, he had obviously a very personal connection. His parents were born in Lithuania. As I said, a one percenter of basketball darkdom or geekery or knowledge. You know, I remember the 1988 Olympics when the Soviets beat the United States. I remembered Marcellonis and Sabonis. And so, you know, that was all, you know, a part of, I knew that story. And, you know, we were sort of brought together, and you know, we were from both same age from LA, and you know, went on this sort of journey together to tell this story that, you know, it's history, it's politics, it's sports, it's the power of the human spirit to, you know, sort of go beyond, take a sports story to the front page. And obviously has this great, funny Grateful Dead Donnie Nelson spiriting out of the Soviet bloc. It was a great, great story. And so, you know, you can either you can have a great story, you know, a decent story well told, you know, a great story okay told, or a great story well told. I think that's the three categories. I'd like to think we had a great story and we told it well.
Definitely.
So, you know, that was just one of these things where it was a privilege to work on, a great journey, and I got to go because my phone is ringing.
Absolutely. John Weinbach, I really appreciate the time you gave us. And March 15th, 8 p.m., CBS, Saturday night. Give it a watch. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Before we go, we've got a news and notes segment brought to you by Squarespace.com. The news and notes are actually just going to be a couple of quick Twitter questions. There is a second episode for Thursday that will be posted shortly after this one. So you can get all of your news and notes there. But today's Twitter questions, wanted to make sure we got to a couple so they don't get lost in the shuffle. At CRVWFORD, David Crawford asks, do you think Noah Vonleh should stay in school another year and most likely be a top three pick in 2015? I do not. I see the value in that, but I think that he's going to be a value. I mean, I think he's a lock to be a top 10, especially once we get into pre-draft workouts. I think he's just going to kill. His skill set's pretty incredible. He's got great touch. I really feel like he is and unfortunately, you have to tell people these days that you mean this as a positive, as a great compliment. But I really think he is a Chris Bosh-like player in the NBA. I'm huge on his skill set and what he brings to the table. So I think it's important for him to get into the NBA as soon as possible, start earning money, start getting experience against NBA players, and not worry about, you know, playing in a system where it's really hard to be a big man and make an impact, and it's really hard to even get post-entry passes, which seems to be the case a lot of the time. At Sean_Woods15, next year, would you rather have Darren Williams or Kyle Lowry? Sean, I would rather have Kyle Lowry, and I'm kind of surprised that I'm saying that. This isn't even a contract thing in terms of how much they make. It's just, can you guarantee that Darren Williams is going to be a better player than Kyle Lowry? I mean, skill set wise, he should be. he should be a much better player than Kyle Lowry. And that's no disrespect to Kyle Lowry, who's fantastic. But Darren Williams should be. But I don't know that we can trust his ankles to allow him to be that good for a full season. Whereas Lowry, I think he's established himself as one of the better point guards in the league. And I think that his defensively, offensively, he just brings more to the table because of Darren Williams' ankle issues. At Green Bee Hybrid, the real hybrid, what is your favorite Ricky Davis-related moment? My favorite Ricky Davis moment is he was on the Cleveland Cavaliers. They're playing the Dallas Mavericks. He's on a fast break. Steve Nash steps in to take a charge. Ricky dunks over him, kind of clears him on the jump, leaning sideways. Nash falls to the ground. He basically just goes right through Steve Nash, kind of over him, and dunks all over him. Gets the foul in his favor, and, you know, 3-point play opportunity. He screams, "Oh!" into the crowd, and then he looks directly into the camera. Like, looks directly into the TV camera on the baseline and screams, "Oh!" again. I think the kids at home could really know what he said. And it's one of the most Ricky Davis moments you can possibly imagine. It's easily my favorite Ricky Davis moment ever. And then at Mr. Dang Dang, MCW leads all rookies in minutes per game, field goals made, rebounds, assists, steals, points per game, has a higher PER and estimated wins than Victor Oladipo. Yet Victor Oladipo was Matt and Royce's Rookie of the Year. Please explain what other Rookie of the Year qualifications one should evaluate if one rook is dominating statistically yet not worthy of the award. We kind of touched on this a little bit yesterday when Matt and I were discussing awards, but I did want to kind of clarify at least a little bit of why I think I think you need more context. It can't just be a straight statistical avenue. Like, it can't just be, this guy's got the best stats, so he's the best player. They play at a crazy, crazy pace, the Sixers do. It's going to be easier to put up those kind of statistical advantages when you have so many more possessions per game. I still have MCW because I don't think that what Victor Oladipo has done lately is any better than what MCW did before. Like when MCW was not dominating, but he was putting up really good numbers and having an impact early in the year. Especially when you're talking about two crappy teams that have combined 34 wins. We're in mid-March and they have combined 34 wins. It's not like the wins now are any more important than the wins back then. It's the same two crappy teams. So for me, the statistical edge was enough, but it shouldn't just be, oh, he's got better stats, so he deserves it. I think there has to be some context. And that's why I think Matt's idea of Steven Adams getting consideration. Now, Steven Adams isn't the Rookie of the Year, but what he's done is probably harder than what Oladipo and MCW have done. So I think that there's a load of context that's needed. That's going to be all for today. John Weinbach was so good in, you know, hammering this home. You really should watch Summer Dreams. Set the DVR. Watch it on Sunday at CBS, March 15th, 8 o'clock. It's really fantastic. Thanks for your support. Appreciate the questions. Appreciate the kind reviews on iTunes or just on Twitter. Make sure to hit us with your Twitter questions with the hashtag EOBPod. Thanks, guys.